A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code THEDIFFERENCE for 30% off every plan. Terms and conditions apply.
What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors, as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now, you can go beyond imaging with 80-plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture. This Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take. It is September 28th, 2025. I'm your host, Bloyce Olson. We are getting closer, about a month away, a little more than that, to major mayor's races in Minneapolis and St. Paul. The Minneapolis mayor's race has attracted national attention. It features multiple candidates, ranked choice voting, and very different ideas for the future of the state's biggest city. And so this week's Sunday Take is going to include excerpts of the Minneapolis mayor's debate that was held Friday from the Citizens League, the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce, and the Downtown Council. I co-moderated this debate with Mary LaHammer. And as long as you're into debates in our cities, I'll just preview that next week we'll have a debate between Quali Herr and Melvin Carter on the Sunday Take. So with that, we'll take a break. When we come back, the Minneapolis mayor's debate. Welcome back to Sunday Take.
What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors, as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now, you can go beyond imaging with 80-plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture. This Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
She said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to kick off this coverage of the mayor's debate with the opening segment of questions. It includes two biggest questions. What do we do to revitalize and re-energize our downtown, including the tax base? And what are the candidates' solutions for public safety? Our five candidates are Mayor Jacob Frey, Senator Omar Fateh, Reverend Dwayne Davis, businessman Jazz Hampton, and businesswoman Brenda Short. Here's the beginning of the debate.
Thanks, y'all, for being here. Thank you for the candidates. This is going to be aired on WCCO Radio, and so just be mindful that it is being streamed live as well. We are downtown, and this question will go to Mayor Frey to begin. Office workers are starting to return. However, companies are using less space. We know that the energy of downtown is not what it was pre-pandemic. What can be done to ensure that downtown property values stabilize and that the traffic and energy that Minneapolis once had return to downtown Minneapolis?
The whole concept of remote or distance work was probably inevitable, but it got expedited by 5 to 8 years by COVID-19. And it's not going to be the cities that cling white-knuckled to what once was that are ultimately successful. It'll be those that embrace change that ultimately see success. So here's what we're going to do. First, we are converting commercial space to residential, focusing first on the pre-World War II buildings that is already underway. Second, we are making sure that downtown is more of a playground, recognizing that it's not just a place where you come into work at 8 a.m. and leave at 5:30 p.m. It'll be a place of commerce. It'll be a place of restaurants and bars. And yes, also we will have access for pedestrian streets only, including on Nicollet Mall. Third, I was the council member of North Loop before it was the North Loop that it is today. One of the things that we did was break up space, not just having one large commercial space per street like a Barnes and Noble or a massive Sports Authority, but making sure that we have a variety of different small and locally owned businesses that are supported. To have that kind of vibrancy on the street, to have those additional doors on the street, not only brings more eyes so that safety is improved, but it also adds for a kind of street dynamic that is unparalleled. We have seen this in other cities. We have seen this in our own, and we can replicate that in the core of downtown. And at the same time, we need to be bringing people back to downtown, recognizing that a business culture is improved, opportunities for promotion are improved, and the city has a chance of truly succeeding when you have a whole lot of people in the space at the same time. Thank you so much.
Senator Fateh, what do you propose is a plan to bring workers back and stabilize the tax base of downtown?
Thanks so much for the question. The downtown that Mayor Frey inherited in 2017 is a dream compared to what we have right now. And he can blame it on COVID-19 or the aftermath of the George Floyd murder. But the reality is that this is all happening under his watch. Until now, we still have boarded up streets and we have a mostly empty downtown. We could do a lot of different things right now. We can fill empty storefronts. We can convert offices to housing. We can't do all of them, but we can do a nice attempt and get a lot of them done. We can keep buses and workers flowing downtown. But one of the major issues we have is that we don't have a mayor that's willing to do so. We have a mayor that called our downtown workers saying that they're at home working, quote unquote, in nasty cat blankets and that they are losers. And so we need a mayor that dignifies all of our workers, value all of our workers, and to make sure that we actually have a plan for our workers and our working families.
Mayor Frey, Senator Fateh addressed you directly. You have a chance to respond.
Well, thank you. As mayor, you have to provide solutions. I will note that Senator Fateh did not provide a single solution that I did not previously state. You can reference a joke that I made that perhaps was not funny. That being said, as mayor, you got to do the hard work of leading. Yes, there's virtually every city throughout the country is dealing with the aftermath of COVID-19, and our city is coming back in fine form. We are seeing real results, and it's those kind of results over this kind of political rhetoric that ultimately you need as mayor.
Okay, we're going to get some others in, but Senator, you were addressed. What are you going to do that is different? That was what you were called out. What's not on Mayor Frey's list that you want to do?
We will two things. We can actually fill the storefronts. That's not happening right now, the vacant storefronts. That's number one.
How do you do
number
that?
Number two, well, we can have a commercial vacancy tax. I wanted to have also a land value tax at the state level, lobby for that to increase the revenue that we have in the city. There's multiple things we can do. But what I want to also address is that it is not a joke calling Minneapolis workers losers. And it's that same bullying tactics that we've seen not only with our residents, but with our city council members and community. And it has resulted in two terms of failures.
Okay, next.
Jazz Hampton, what would you do to bring vibrancy and return Minneapolis's downtown tax base to strength?
you know, to pretend like any of this isn't a chicken or the egg situation is disingenuous. So it's more than just bringing back the workers. I was talking to someone recently, a business owner downtown, and you know what they said to me? They said, you know what's better than having our workers downtown 3 days a week? Having more people living here 7 days a week. I used to live on 9th in Portland, right above that CVS. If you know, right when you exit downtown, that CVS left. And after that CVS left, the coffee shop that was across the street left. And my wife and I had just had our first daughter and Penelope was born, and we didn't even have a coffee shop close enough to walk to. My wife also worked at Target at the time, and so her ability to walk to Target was something she loved. I just talked to another resident that said, I only look for jobs as a downtown resident that are in downtown. We can build up the corridor of small businesses that are around these residential opportunities and do much better in that space. That is the start of the process. We also have to reduce the wait times for permitting and for inspections in the process of building these buildings. I talked to a restaurant owner that said because of the length of time we had to wait, I'm now hesitant to open another restaurant in the city of Minneapolis.
Okay, let's get Brenda Short in here too on solutions, specific solutions for downtown.
First of all, we need to make it safe. Minneapolis as a whole is not safe. So we need to make sure that we have more safety in our downtown area, because that is pushing our suburbs family away from our city. So I would suggest that making it more friendly, family friendly downtown, and making more comfortable space like fireplaces and play areas for young children. But I am looking to do the most changing thing for downtown, and that's bring events such as, instead of Thanksgiving Eve, we watching the parade, we should be bringing the parade to downtown Minneapolis, bringing our children as front line, making each school perform in that parade, and then on New Year's Eve. Definitely, we should be doing a New Year's Eve downtown Minneapolis and dropping the Vikings ship. So we need to first make it down safe for every, Minneapolis needs to make it safe for us. Then for those empty buildings, we need to invest in reaching out to big boxes to bring back the traffic. Because if we have stores,
okay,
on Nicollet Mall, thank you.
Reverend Davis, with same question on downtown revitalization.
Well, the first thing is, so is one of the things we haven't really explained is that the biggest asset that we have is that we are the city. This is the economic engine of the entire state. You want to be here. Business wants to be here. You want to visit here. That's how you start. One of the most disheartening things that I felt, especially during the 2021 election, mayoral election, was the conversation about downtown. The rhetoric that was used was that this was a hellscape, instead of saying what was good and promising in what we could do. So my point is, first of all, you start off there. This is where you want to be. This is a great asset. And we have a vibrant city that you will want to park yourself
in. And quickly, how? What?
Here's yeah. how. Once I do that, here's the thing. Smaller parcels, all those things, those are great ideas. But one thing I know in talking to small business, we have got to make it easy for people to step. Some small business don't think they could be downtown. They think it's already too expensive. But incentivize their location there, expedite reviews, expedite their processes so they can make it, they can get there, and then people can come bring the foot traffic to those small businesses.
Okay, next question. It's already come up. Public safety. It's on a lot of our minds. We've had mass shootings. We've had a lot of violence, vandalism, security. It's really tight here, you may have noticed, coming in and out. This is the world we live in today. Senator, I want you to take it up first, because you've had anti-Muslim vandalism at your campaign headquarters. Talk about the response to that, and also how you talk about public safety being tied to defunding the police at some point. Explain those two things.
Yeah, so our vision for public safety revolves around one, that when you call 911, you get the appropriate response, and you actually get a response, period. What do I mean by that? We don't need an armed officer to respond to every single call. We know that at the city, we had a report that showed that nearly half of 911 calls can be diverted away from police. That means alternatives to police, the BCR teams, the crisis response, the mental health workers. I worked really hard with my colleagues at the Capitol to bring in $19 million in public safety aid to help beef that up. But for a long time, it went largely untouched because we had a mayor that was having an adversarial relationship and disputes with city council and not able to get the job done and disperse the dollars in a way in which it was meant to be dispersed. We know that we can have a public safety system in which you get the call, you call 911, and you get the appropriate response. But every response does not require an armed officer. And right now, what we have is a system failure. There's been 5 years after the murder of George Floyd. The mayor promised a plan. There is still no plan. And so what we envision is which, yes, there are going to be police, but we're going to take some of their caseload off so that they can focus on violent crime, which is, by the way, what I heard at the Capitol, them come testifying, saying that we can't respond to every single call. We need help. We need alternatives to policing so that we can get some of our caseloads off so that we can respond to violent threats.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, I'd like you to take public safety next. You've been the spokesperson through massive tragedies, shootings, deaths. It's been a really brutal summer for the state and the city of Minneapolis. In the strong mayor system, what can you do with the police force, with the Hennepin County attorney? What are your new solutions?
So let's start where we agree. I believe in a comprehensive form of public safety where we are matching a unique skill set with the unique circumstances happening on the ground. And we are one of the few cities in the country that are carrying that out. We now have 24-hour a day, 7-day a week mental health response. And I also believe that we need police officers, and we need far more than we have right now. We are presently increasing the number of officers that we have on the police force. We saw a 135% increase in applications, and the MPD is more diverse than it has ever been in history. And here's what we can do. Check out what we have seen on the north side. While violent crime is down in virtually every category citywide, on the north side, it is at near record lows. It is lower in terms of shootings than it has been at any time, at least since 2007. And how do we get there? First, we developed a partnership with our U.S. attorney, making sure that we were prosecuting some of these violent offenders.
What about county attorney?
Second, yes, our MPD works directly with the county attorney to make sure that cases go to her and are ultimately charged. Third, we work with community members, with grandmoms and moms to make sure that we're able to suss out violent situations before they arise. And what has that resulted in? Lower crime. And
how is that different? Because you said I'll start with where we agree. Where do you disagree?
Well, first, we disagree on police officers. While candidates may have changed their position over time, Senator Omar Fateh very clearly supported defunding and getting rid of police. I, through the most difficult of circumstances, have stood up and said that is not the right method now. That is not the right method, period.
Senator Fateh, Mayor Frey addressed you directly there. You have a chance to respond. Do you believe that the level of officers currently is enough? And would you keep the police budget the same, increase it, or decrease it as mayor?
Well, number one, it's the law. The charter requires over 700 officers. That's the law, number one. Number two, I want to address the comment made by the mayor, if that's okay. I supported question two in 2021, which would have created an Office of Public Safety that had a police department under it with alternatives as well.
Is that now, defunding the police? Is that a fair depiction?
No, because number one, we have a charter that shows how many officers we need. We have a budget based off of that. We increased the budget year after year since the murder of George Floyd. We never decreased the police budget. But we know that if we need to take off nearly half of the cases off of the caseloads for our officers, we need to beef up our public safety response, such as those alternatives.
Okay,
but that's a flat out lie.
Let's get Reverend in on this one. What are your solutions for public safety and violence and the really big uptick we've seen this summer in mass?
Yes. Well, yeah. First of all, I will start. I reject any false dilemma that it is only either a warrior style police that is at every corner, making sure like it is in D.C. with the National Guard, and defund. there are a lot of options and good options between those two extremes. But what I'm looking at is, again, I served on the community safety work group. And one of the things that we were looking for is not only a broad community public safety matrix, but all of those pieces working at full capacity, which means, by the way, a violence interrupter where we have data collection, data management, data evaluation, setting outcomes, a behavioral crisis response that is fully expanded across all of the entire city. But also making sure we're under a court enforceable settlement agreement, making sure that not only as we get more police, that those reforms are embedded completely so that everybody trusts our police and that police can work in that matrix in every corner of the city.
Jazz Hampton, you're up next. You've talked about having your car stolen multiple times. Suburbanites say they're afraid to go home into the city, right? Carjackings get a lot of press, a lot of fear. Talk about personally, just like Senator Fateh had some personal interaction on this issue of public safety. Personally, how do you come at public safety differently in light of your experience?
Yeah, I believe that we have to take the amount of things off of the plates that we're currently asking officers to do. We haven't gone far enough in that work. The second is just because we're saying we're working really hard to hire more police officers doesn't mean we're doing the best thing possible to hire more police officers, because I believe we have a deep need for more officers in this city. We have to have more, and we have to ask them to do less so they're more likely to stay on this force, and we're more likely to recruit others from other cities to come and stay here. I've talked to other rural mayors that said, we have a great police force and we have more that want to move up and out of our rural area.
What about car theft, specifically car theft and carjacking?
A part of the reason we have to expand the amount of officers we have right now is to have dedicated divisions. When windows are being smashed consistently, we have to have dedicated officers addressing spikes in crime that are unique to a specific area and type. And to that point, I want to be really clear on one other thing. I'm very happy that it is a safer city, and I believe that we do have a safe city. It's not unsafe for anyone watching outside of Minneapolis. But the superlatives, I think, are misleading. To say that gunshot wounds are doing better right now is not true. In the last four years here, compared to the 4 years prior to this current administration, the gunshot wounds are almost double on average per year. So the comparison is not accurate.
Let's let the mayor, you just took on some stats and his stance on some issues. Can you talk about gun violence that he addressed there in the last 4 years?
I can. We had significant spikes in 2021 and 2022, and that was a time when the perception matched the reality. We have seen dramatic reductions in gun violence and shootings over the last 2 years, and I will specifically call out the North Side. You can break these statistics in a number of different ways, but again, their shootings are lower than at any time since 2007.
But what about mass shootings? Because you've had to be the face of some horrific tragedies that have happened, and you're the person up there talking to the world about what's happening in Minneapolis and violence.
We have. Look, at Annunciation, was one of the most horrific things that our city has ever experienced.
Right. And how do we stop that from happening again?
Well, how do we stop that from happening? We ban assault rifles. We ban high-capacity magazines. And if the we can't locally, but if the state or the federal government isn't willing to do it, we should have the ability in cities to do it ourselves. And I will note that in terms of the response, our officers were there in 4 minutes. They did not hesitate. They busted through the doors. They were looking for a potential second shooter at the same time they were looking for other explosives. They were tying a kid in a tourniquet.
What about prevention?
At the same
time.
That's
after the fact.
That is after the fact. How can we prevent mass shootings? The truth is that the work goes well beyond cities. It's got to be work with other jurisdictions. It's got to be work to prevent this gun violence from happening, from preventing guns that were literally designed to kill large numbers of people in a very short period of time from entering the city and preventing people from getting them.
Brenda, how about public safety and solutions?
First of all, I believe to bring our city safe, we need a community and our officers to work together. Edina has done a great job building relationships with their officers and their community. They have a monthly meeting with their community. And first of all, we need to know who's in the street, and they need to know us. Second of all, both politicians have disrespected our officers. One says defund the police. Another officer disrespected the officers by offering a chief of police job to someone out of the state instead of, and replaced a female officer who was already transitioned into that space. So both of the politicians on the, who's sitting here, you guys both disrespected our officers. And to bring our safety back to our streets, we need both community members and our peace officers. And I said peace officers because peace officers bring peace to our community, not chaos. Thank you.
I think rebuttal, Senator, you looks like you want to get in on that and saying that you disrespected police by defunding police. That was brought up.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is no disrespect on my end towards police officers in supporting question two, which would have created an Office of Public Safety. That's number one. And number two, I think it was actually more respectful for them because they came to the Capitol asking for more help, more support, or more resources, saying that we can't address every single call. And so you talked about gun violence a little bit earlier. Two things to that. Number one, that is a symptom of poverty, one of the main reasons of that. And if we don't address our city's failure to provide an adequate social safety net for all of our communities, it's going to continue happening. And that's a failure on the city. Now, the main issue we have is that we have a mayor that created a toxic situation with city council and with communities by implying that if you're pro police accountability, you're anti-public safety. And that's flat out wrong.
Okay, rebuttal, Mr. Mayor.
Never once has that ever been said. So let's stop setting up these straw man arguments only to knock them down. I have said, notwithstanding Donald Trump, we are going to abide by every sentence of every paragraph of both the consent decree and the settlement agreement. And by the way, you don't need to take my word for it. The independent monitor stated that Minneapolis is making more progress towards a foundation of police reform than virtually any city in the country. So I stand by police reform. And just for the record, you don't need to take my word for it either. Look at what Senator Fateh said specifically, which I believe was about completely defunding police. You do not need to take my word for it. You can look at what his website previously said. It's widely available online. And so, you know, in this case, as mayor, there are some moments when you need to stand up against something that is wrong, and there are moments when you need to stand for what is right. Sometimes it is hard, sometimes it does not respond with cheers, but you got to do the right thing all the same.
I want to stay on the topic of public safety because it's come up and it's obviously a very timely topic. You've brought up the chief, and we've talked about officer numbers. We'll start with a little quick lightning round. If elected mayor, do you keep Chief O'Hara? And if not, who do you replace Chief O'Hara with?
Start with you, Brenda.
Yeah, yes, I would replace Chief O'Hara. And why is because he represents our city. He has made several statements negative about our city. And he has made no attempts to protect everyone, such as the shooting with the gentleman who was shot by a neighbor. It took him weeks and said he was not going to bum rush someone's house.
Let's go through this quickly, Jazz. Yeah. What do you do? Quick round.
Yeah, I saw your interview yesterday about this. Actually, I am absolutely open to keeping Chief O'Hara. And what I expect is to hold him accountable to the level that I and the city believes is necessary. Some things I've seen have been troubling to me in the last several months, but it doesn't mean that the relationship is beyond repair. And frankly, I think that's something that's important right now in the city, working with folks, even if you have
Mr. Mayor, you were called out for replacing a woman and bringing someone in out of state specifically, too.
Chief O'Hara has my full support. I'm proud to have recruited him from Newark, where is a city that where he was known for both reforming the police and driving down crime.
Okay. Senator?
I think it would be irresponsible for me to make that decision before the election.
Do you approve of the job he's doing right now?
I've had strong disagreements with the police chief, but I would have to meet with him, and I have to meet with the city council as well to come up with this.
Okay, Reverend, I'm the chief.
Same thing. Everybody in the city enterprise will have to make a case for themselves. And if Chief O'Hara is going to be with me on my vision and where I want to go, sure, he has a good chance of staying on.
Let's keep the pace going. President Trump and the National Guard, would anybody support that?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No.
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 That was a lightning round.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. We're going to continue our coverage of the Minneapolis mayor's debate from Friday. The next topic that the candidates discussed was encampments. Here are those candidates talking about encampments on Sunday Take.
We're going to switch topics now. The next topic is home encampments. We're going to start with you, Senator Fateh, on this question. The city has been struggling to manage these homeless encampments. First question is, are encampments acceptable? And what do you do to ensure that encampments do not continue to proliferate in our city?
Very good question. Number one, none of the challengers on the stage right now want encampments to persist. It is unfair for our unhoused neighbors, and it's unfair for our residents. That's number one. But we need to deal with it in a humane and compassionate way. And what we know is that bulldozing our neighbors block by block does not put them into housing. Throwing away their belongings, their key identifiers, their social security cards, their IDs, that does not help. Just last week, when what we saw with the bulldozing and the removal of the encampment on Lake Street is that we saw that a mother lost the ashes of her child. The mayor's staff threw the ashes away of the mother's child. I think that's heartbreaking. That's devastating. And that came less than 24 hours after a traumatic shooting in which 13 of their fellow unhoused neighbors were shot.
So how do I deal with that?
Number one, a couple of things. Number one, first, we see the approach that our administration is taking by moving our homelessness response
With all due respect,
yes.
We want to cover as many topics as possible.
Correct.
I specifically asked, how would you deal with it differently?
And I'm saying exactly that, moving it back out of regulatory services into public health, because we need a public health approach. And what we know is that in these encampments, we have a spread of infectious diseases like hepatitis, syphilis, HIV. This is a public health emergency.
What about the public safety issues that are happening in the encampments?
Well, there's...
How do you address that part?
Yeah, well, just like there's gun violence in our encampments, just like there's gun violence issues within our schools that we've seen, within our public spaces, nowhere is safe, and that's a symptom of poverty. But it's easy just to blame it on the encampments because they can't defend themselves. Now, we need to take a housing-first approach. We need to connect people to housing, and I've spoken to people on the ground. The city is not doing a good faith effort in connecting people to resources. We need to make sure that we are addressing it cross-jurisdictionally okay. with our county and with our state.
Let's hear from the head of the city. You just took him on a lot of those issues.
And I've had the experience bringing in millions of dollars
okay.
myself as a chief author to Simpson, to Agate, and to Avivo.
Mr. Mayor, you were criticized roundly for how you handled the encampment and the reaction to it.
Senator Fateh mentioned taking a public health approach. This was, in fact, a public health emergency and a nuisance that ultimately resulted in 7 people getting shot. As to a housing first approach, I believe that housing is a right. Everyone should have a safe place to go home to at the end of the night, to rest their head on the pillow and to rejuvenate for the next day. And Minneapolis is doing more than virtually any city in the country.
What about, he said your approach was inhumane in how the encampment was cleared with bulldozers and what happened to people there.
Let's talk about how we handle encampments. First, we go out to visit the encampment and we provide social services. We partner extensively with the county and other jurisdictions. We provide social service support. We offer shelter, oftentimes housing. We even bring a mobile medical unit out to the encampment to make sure that there's things like wound care and health services that are right there on site. And yes, when an encampment is dangerous, in fact, encampments, period, are not safe. They are not safe for the people living there. They are not safe for the people in the surrounding neighborhood.
Do you want no encampments? Would you take that stance that there should be no encampments?
We should not have encampments in the city of Minneapolis. Okay. And what we should be doing is connecting people to homes. We have provided 8.5 times the amount of deeply affordable homes since before I took office. 8.5 times. And just so we're clear, deeply affordable means 30% of area median income and below.
Okay. You're out of time. So, Jazz Hampton, what's your approach on encampments? How do you ensure they don't proliferate?
First, I believe this is like chopping down a tree. You approach and you say, here are the solutions, here are the services, and you take a by name approach. That means if there's 38 people in an encampment on the north side, you say, hi, I'm Jazz, what's your name? Cindy, nice to meet you. I'd like to learn about the services and needs that you need that we can provide in this moment. And you do it again and again and again. To say the sentence, we tried and they didn't accept it, so we're sweeping, I don't know how many times we've tried. We have to do it in every chop. You don't know which one's going to do the work, but eventually that tree will fall. And that's the approach that we need to take within this city. No, I do not think encampments should exist. I absolutely do not. It's our job. It's incumbent upon the mayor in this city to ensure that for the residents that are in that encampment, for the neighbors next to it, and for the businesses as well, or for the child that gets hurt. And if I could address one thing, I'm a lawyer, and so when numbers or evidence is given, I want to go look at it. And when we say 8.5 times, I've looked up that number multiple times when we say that. And all that I have seen is that meant that we went from 85 deeply affordable units on average to 296. That we need a lot more than 296 per year. So that the 8.5 times number, while it's good, but if you're multiplying 35 affordable units by 8.5 times, that is not even close
to
enough.
Dwayne Davis is eager to get in.
I am eager to get in. I'm glad to hear the mayor say that he doesn't want encampments. But if you don't want encampments, then you're going to have to do something very different than what you're doing. You simply cannot react when an encampment comes up. Our homelessness response team is woefully inadequate for someone who says that they don't want encampments, meaning before an encampment even gets to that size where it is a roving criminal band, you need to have people on the ground so that even when you see one tent, you have deployed people that are already depopulated.
What kind of people? What solutions?
We have only 4 people, I think, 4 or 5 last time I checked, in homeless response in the regulatory service. It obviously isn't enough. We need more people in that office. We need a plan. We now do not have a plan. The response we're getting is a reaction. That isn't a policy. That isn't a plan. Fill that office, appropriate the dollars, use the $330,000 or $400,000 you use per sweep, and use that to build a homeless response office and team that is equal to the task and can do it.
Dwayne, you said these are roving criminal enterprises. Should the police intervene when an encampment gets started?
If you have an encampment with 100 people, yes, there's no choice. I'm trying to say stop. Don't let it get to the point where you have these criminals out there.
You would favor using law enforcement to break up encampments when they get started.
I would. If someone is shooting in a encampment, I want the police there.
You said when they start.
No. Start meaning if you see 2 people in an encampment, get our homelessness response team out there. So that
Mr.
you can
Mayor,
depopulate.
Mr. Mayor, radio audience can't see you shaking your head no. So tell us why you're shaking your head no.
Look, there's multiple candidates up here that have literally said that they will not clear encampments. Period. That is problematic. One, I'm the one that gets the briefings that there is a 12-year-old girl that is getting human trafficked. I'm the one that gets the briefing that a retaliation through gun violence is about to take place. And as for the work that we're doing, we are one of the only cities in the country that is seeing a substantial reduction in unsheltered homelessness, over 33%. That work is not easy. This work is complex. So you can come forward with a catchphrase or a simple solution. The truth is that it doesn't exist. We are doing the hard work to drive down homelessness and unsheltered homelessness.
Brenda
and we need
Short,
to keep that
can you
going.
Talk about homelessness and encampments and your
First
solutions?
First of all, I'm the only one on this panel who has been unhoused in the streets of Minneapolis. I have a plan. So first, we need to stop those buses from out of state bringing their unhoused neighbors into our community, because don't say that does not happen, sir. I live on East Lake Street and I see it twice a week, and I'm out there feeding the unhoused. But my plan is, there is a nursing home in South Minneapolis who has been empty for over 2 years. It houses a minimum of 250 people, but we can force 300 and take that facility, because it's 3 levels. We can take that facility, bring in the sources into that building, such as a clinic and programs such as PPL, Summit Academy, so they don't have to be roaming the streets during the day. They can be trained Monday through Friday so they can get a job. And then my second level is take those abandoned houses, repair them, so it can be good and fit for our unhoused neighbors. So once they get a job, they transitioning into our the housing.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yep. Let's do a quick round down the line here. From housing to rent control, we've seen St. Paul do it. Rent control in Minneapolis, yes or no, down the line?
No.
Yes.
No.
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 Okay, but we got one yes. Explain there the yes, Senator.
Senator Fatte, explain why you would support rent control.
Why yes, and how, do you think it worked in St. Paul?
And how it would be different than St. Paul or not have the same impact?
Did Brenda respond?
Senator Fatte?
Did Brenda respond?
Senator.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Yes, I do support a strong policy. In 2021, what we know is that the voters at the polls overwhelmingly supported us advancing and exploring the opportunity for our city to advance it. That's number one. Number two,
I think from St. Paul. It's been roundly criticized.
Yes, absolutely.
Paul.
And I think we have a lot of opportunities to learn from St. Paul, including what exemptions can we put into place. And that includes having exemptions that can incentivize good behavior. If you want to qualify for an exemption, then you got to have this many affordable units. If you want to qualify for an exemption, you got to do XYZ. And I think that's the responsible thing to do. But right now, we got to make sure that in a time when renters are being squeezed out, in a time when inflation is hitting everyone, that we're protecting all of our renters.
Boys.
Welcome back.
BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boosts, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boost, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. MLB trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards, payback, and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors, as early as stage 1, all in under an hour. And now, you can go beyond imaging with 80-plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture. This Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at Prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now, Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This week's take is really about the city of Minneapolis and the mayor's election. It goes to what I've been trying to share in the last couple of weeks about running for governor too. What is clear is that we need a plan for the city of Minneapolis. And hopefully if you live in the city of Minneapolis, that's what you're looking for. And that it's a sustainable plan that doesn't continue to offer kind of half solutions. We need some big ideas in Minneapolis. And this Minneapolis mayor's race is a chance for somebody to come out and break out with that. I'll be with the morning show at 6:20 all week. You can find all of our stuff at thedailyagenda.com. Until next week, that's the Sunday Take.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.